kind of condemned.
Well, is just on a personal level, or is...
I thought he wasn't an effective speaker, and I didn't think very much of him as a writer, and I know that as a labor leader he may have been very, very good. I understand he was. I met him once, several times. I told you that my daughter Frances did that when he was there. They didn't let him speak. Yeah.
Well, Barbara, do you feel that Browder was reflecting a position of the Soviet Union, or do you feel that it was that he this was his own position, or that he'd gone too far?
I think he went way too far, and I think it was his own position. But I don't see how it could help, how that could help the Soviet Union at that time. I thought it was too bad to expel him. I didn't agree with that. I thought that he did have, when he wrote some of the things about our American history, traitors in American history and everything, I thought he did a pretty good job, and I thought we should have... He didn't want to be expelled. I thought he should have stayed in and discussed things with him. I didn't see any reason to expel him.
Well, what did you feel? We start with what we mentioned earlier. How did you feel when, for instance, here Elizabeth Gurley Flynn had made these glowing statements about him when
yeah,
he was
yes,
Kansas.
I know, the man from Kansas.
And then she turned around at the public meet, well, I guess it was the meeting of the National Committee. And denounced him. How did you feel about that kind of behavior on her part?
Well, you see, that's the thing about Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. I thought when she was on IWW, she was just wonderful. When she first joined the party, I thought she had transferred her first ancestry had been Catholic, and I thought she had become a first-class Catholic because she was defending everything that... and everything. And when she came here, you know, she had lunch here several times, and she was a nice person. You couldn't help but like her. And I said, you know, Elizabeth, I don't believe that you can really carry both flags like that. And she said, well, you know, there are times when you're in a position where you just have to do something. You're not always sure which is the best way. You do the best you can. If you made a mistake, well, so be it. And I remember at that time, too, I was terribly sorry for her only son. At 30 years of age, you know, he got a brain tumor and died just as we went into the war. Mm. So he had said he will never fight in a capitalist war. Well, he never had a chance to. And I thought that was a terrible thing. You see, she had been in love with the anarchist...
Lester.
Yeah. And that was a very sad thing. That was his son, her mm-hmm. son.
And then I guess that was a little bit later, that Trista was killed by the fascists in New York, wasn't it, by the Italian
yes,
fascists?
Yes, yes, yes. But he was a wonderful guy. Really a wonderful guy. Some of the anarchists... I didn't agree with all of them because I only had a few anarchist friends. And when they spoke against government and everything, I said, look, then there will come a time when man will become civilized enough that he'll need no government. But you know that isn't the time yet. You still need it, some form of government. You still need it.
When did you first meet Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, Barbara?
When did I first meet
Elizabeth Gurley Flynn?
I didn't meet her until after the war.
Mm.
I heard, you know, read her speeches and everything. And as a speaker, she was very effective. She was something like, well, not quite as much like Ellery Bloor, whom I knew a whole lot better. I knew only two of Ellery Bloor's sons. One was a professor at UC in Berkeley, and one had come as just a speaker for some union, I don't remember now what it was, and everything. And the one, Professor Adler, because Elizabeth Gurley Flynn had husbands, Jews and non-Jews, and You know, she had six children, and I think only two of them had the same father.
Well, this is Ella
Reed Bloor. But you know, she was one of those speakers. You stomped on the working class, you know. Something like Billy Sunday. Really. But she was a nice person. She was really a nice person. She said to me once, I'd invited her to stay at our house. She said, Barbara, I'd like to. But I really don't like to stay at anybody's home, and I'll tell you why. I like hotels. When I get through with the meeting, I want to rest. When I stay at anyone, they think they want to be nice to me by talking about the same thing that I talk about all the time. He says, so I don't relish it. So thank you for the invitation. But you understand when I was with you? I said, perfectly. You don't mind? I said, not at all. I won't even have to worry about what I have to do for you.
Well, was your association?
That was in Berkeley.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Your association with her was in the late 20s and 30s mainly.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. She was already, yes, it was only a few years after. But I remember when she was 83 years old at the last convention, and I wasn't a delegate, but because I'd been in it so long, see, I got a courtesy card that I could come to all the meetings. And Ella Reed Bloor, you know, was there just as the visible and then fighting and everything. Her card was the first one to get out the vote. But I thought, see, she said to me, we will, of all the things, we may tolerate a few things, but one thing we will not tolerate is criticism of the Soviet Union. Ella Reed Bloor. And this was in 1948.
So you had agreements over this.
Oh, I never discussed it with her. We discussed it with her. But you see, I had met in Denver when I was 17 years old. I had met Judge Lindsay, the Republican. I think I told you about that. The guy across the street from us was a Republican, and he wanted someone. They used to pick up the people to go to vote and give them a carriage and pick them up. Mm-hmm. And because I knew so many people, there from the time I was 9 and a half years old, and I had to write letters for many of them. So Mr. Grimmitz came over and said he'd give me a job to go and pick up the voters. Now you see that they vote for Buchtel, not for Lindsay. So I didn't answer him, you know, but I was for Lindsay. Lindsay was the kid's judge. Mm-hmm. And I loved him, although I had never met him, you know. So everywhere I went, I said, now listen, I was told to vote for Buchtel. But you know who Buchtel is. He's for the capitalist system. But Lindsay is for the kids. He's for people knowing who they come from, the slums and everything. He said, vote for Lindsay. And my whole town told him solidly. So Mr. Grimmitz came over and he said, how come that all that and everything? I said, well, Mr. Grimmitz, I'm not their conscience. He said, listen, they would know what they would ask you. They don't know who to vote for. You told them to vote for Lindsay. I said, you can't prove that. He said, but you know very well they wouldn't have voted for Lindsay without you saying that because they don't know who they're voting for. That's what we sent you for. I said, well, what made you think that I was for Buchtel? I said, because that you were getting paid $10 for it. But I feel that I'm not going to give you a goddamn cent, you little son of a bitch. I'd like to cut your throat. I said, if you don't pay me the $10, I'll report you to the Democratic Committee. I'll report you to the and say what you're trying to but just because he won and me and you lost. He said, you would do that? I said, I sure will. I would. And he said, well, here's your $10 and you go to hell. I said, after you, Mr. Grimmitz, after you. That was my first encounter working for a political party. But it's true. Those people didn't know. You know, a Jewish community, how did they know? Poor Jews who couldn't read and write, many of them. Of course, so they voted just exactly. They had confidence in me because I wrote letters for them, which I hated. And everything. So, you know, so that I found out, but and I never liked Republicans anyway.
So it sounds, Barbara, like from that illustrates that very, very young, you were trying to influence.
Oh yes, people. Yes, yes. I was. I told you I had that feeling when I was just very, when I started reading the Bible when I was 11. because I wanted to find out what kind of a God was in there. And then when I was only 14, I guess, when the guy brought Some Mistakes to Moses by Ingersoll, oh, you'd get a big kick out of it. He makes fun of it. He said, well, he makes fun of where the Jews, you know, take the chicken and put it over their head and said, that's the Kippurah angel. You remember that? You put the head...
Yeah.
Years to death and me to life, years to death and the chicken is killed. That's why they call it Kippurah angel.
Now, Barbara, the people like Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, for example, was one of the few women in the party who really, and I think Whitney maybe, who dealt with issues related to women. Was there talk among women in the party about the position and situation of women as such?
Yes, there was. There was quite a bit, the unequal thing that they should get. Why do they have to get half the pay that men are getting? Or certainly there, and women have to take care of the house, and if they got to do work, you know, they still have to do that. You know, the man can get home and take his paper and read it and everything. Yes, I think there was always that. Yes, there was a lot of struggle about women
within the party itself.
Yes, there was.
Would there be, say, a party function? Would there be an equal distribution of the work, or would the women end up doing all the cooking and the cleaning and all of that?
Well, you see, now there it would depend upon, they would ask the men to help to clean up and everything. If they were nice guys, they did. If not, they wouldn't refuse, but they would get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were nice guys, they did help.
But it was nothing that was really specifically... For instance,
they supported the suffrage movement.
Mm-hmm. But for instance, one of the big issues from the middle 30s on was attempting to appeal to the Negro and the position on blacks. There was never that kind of issue made out of the position of women, was there?
Well, not like women's lib.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, but I think they did always stress it. There wasn't a campaign about it like there was about the Negro, because that, you know, really the things that were going on in the South were horrible with the Negro, and there was great need for it at that time. There was really need for it. But we supported the suffrage movement, and many of the communists tied themselves up with others to the fighting for suffrage. You see, I told you in Colorado, we had the suffrage long before any other state had, so there was nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even my mother voted, though she could only make a cross. She voted, but they always voted the Democratic ticket.
Well, among the women in the party, say, after you rejoined in the 30s, was there much discussion about, was the discussion among the women, or was it a general discussion about the position?
Both, sometimes about the women, but generally in a party meeting they discussed it. They said, look, no matter what, you're fighting for socialism, but you still think that you look ahead. Because there was a lot like that, you know. Not very many women were elected to higher office either, you know. Neither is it to this day in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, within the party itself, then, despite the fact that how much of the membership do you think was women, in your experience?
I think in the party, I think the preponderance were women.
But despite this, the leadership was almost predominantly male.
That's right,
women.
That's right.
I mean, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn was one of the few.
One of the very few.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellery Bloor.
Mm-hmm.
Kay Richards O'Hare in the Socialist Party. You had to have exceptional merit and be a very good speaker. And about Ellery Bloor, she was a good speaker, but this was her technique, like Billy Sunday. You stabbed down the working class. And everything, you know, shouting and everything. Now, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn was a very fine speaker. And I know that when she spoke here at one of the places, she had to go upstairs, and you were quite heavy. She had gained a lot of weight, and it was very difficult for her to go up. But a bunch of ruffians came in, and they were trying to make it, and the part of people became very concerned. She said, don't worry about it. I'm accustomed to dealing with it. So she said, look there in the back there, the six of you that came up here. Listen, you know, believe me, you'll learn a whole lot more if you open your ears and put your hands down. Don't shout so much. Open your mouth less and your ears more, and you learn more. Now, we're friends. You don't have to come up here. We're not your enemies. We're your friends. But, you know, it isn't a nice thing to go ahead and be a part of a gang and want to fight people who are your friends, who are fighting for you and everything. So will you do that for me? I'm an old lady, and I come here as a friend, not as an enemy. Put your hands in your pockets if you want to. It is not very warm. And just listen. And do you know, it worked like a charm. It worked like a charm. She said she found generally she never had to use any ear great measure. But I was present at a meeting here on Western Avenue when Dorothy was speaking, and there was a group, and there was about five of them. Nice-looking, blonde-headed guys, you know, came up and said, look, we listened to what you said, and you're a good speaker, but if our organization, I'm sure they were butchers, told us to kill you, we wouldn't hesitate 1 minute to kill you. And she said, why would you want to kill me? I tell you, I got sick when I was standing right there. He said, because our organization... But do you know of anything that about me that you would want to? No, we don't, but they would. Mm. And can you imagine that?
Now, Barbara, after Carol Jean left home, then when during the war, when she married.
Yes, yes.
And then after she left home.
1942.
After she left home, you and Dan then just lived alone.
When she, when she came back?
No, when she left home then, you and Dan just lived
home. Oh, well, Dorothy was with me with Ricky.
Oh, Dorothy was already here?
Oh, of course. She came home when she was pregnant with Ricky, and he was born, and then he was only 5 days old, so she was in my house.
Oh, well.
And then at 65th Street, we lived just about 2 miles from here.
When was he born?
He was born in June 18th, 1943. Mm. So Don had, you know, was in the army, and Dorothy had been she had been a deputy labor commissioner for the state of California, and she was living in San Francisco, and she came down here and she stayed. And when Ricky was only 8 months old, she resigned from it, and I went with her, and she saw Dalton was at the head of it. And he said, Dorothy, why are you leaving? This is the first time you're getting decent pay and all kinds of things benefits you've never gotten. Why are you, no one is after you here. Why are you there resigning? She said, Mr. Dalton, I found out that the only thing, my little sister calls me nothing but a policeman, and that's all I am. All I have the authority to do is to go after little shopkeepers and tell them they can't employ their own children because that's against child labor law. And most of these little shops, many of them Italians, say, look, Mrs. Healy, if my own children don't help me when they come home to school, how can I compete with the supermarket? How will I make a living? Mrs. Healy, please don't report us. So do you think, I will report them. I wouldn't think of it. I can't get after the big guys who are really responsible. Mm-hmm. You know that, how limited by it. Sure, as far as I'm concerned, the first time I'm getting good wages, all kinds of fringe benefits, I've never had it before. But I have not spent my whole life, and now that I have a child, it becomes even more important to me to go on carrying the fight against a society that has produced the war, that produces all the things that I've been for all the time. And being a deputy labor commissioner is the way that I could help in that fight against what capitalism does. He says, well, Mr. Dalton said, well, I admire and like you, Dorothy, but I'm sorry. I really would have liked to see you live a little bit better.
And then she came back down here?
Well, she was here. Mm. He came down to the state building and had a meeting, you know, because the main office was in San Francisco and everything. And she said she hated the job because she knew she wasn't doing anything.
Well, Barbara, did you have, I mean, both you and Dorothy were very, I guess in the early days, she wasn't quite as questioning as you were. Did you have conflicts over this?
The only time we had these conflicts was about Stalin that time. Or when I told her another thing that we had conflicts with, the party would take, you know, they never paid anybody. And they would take someone who, after years of struggle, sleeping on floors, getting their foot by mooching and everything, you know, and they would take someone who had just gotten a job and take him out of his job and tell him he's needed in Timbuktu and send him. And I said, Dorothy, what kind of a thing is this? It's so hard to get a job. It's terrible. If he's got a job, they send him out. And I said, but they need him there. I said, then let them find someone else they can send. He had, after all these years struggling, they're not paying them. And I believe that everyone has to get paid something so that they can at least take care of their immediate needs. And I said, I think that's a terrible thing. How dare they do that? But, Mama, you don't understand. The needs of the movement come first. I said, the needs of human being comes first. If you cease, you can't cease to be a human being to betray humanity just because you think the needs of something else are. You're not bettering those ends if you forget your own humanity. Well, Mama, you have to stop being an idealist and see it as the thing as it is. Well, when I cease to think of people as people and forget that, Dorothy, I just would be very, very unhappy. To me, every human being has the same quality for dignity and a life. And I can't, when I know that when I have enough to eat and I think of the many who haven't, if my not eating it won't ever do them any good. So, but it doesn't make me happy.
But it was just those two.
So those were the only two things that ever we had an issue about. That was one thing, and about Stalin was the other thing.
Was it very early that you had the conflict about Stalin?
Yeah, when the killing was going on with about Stalin.
During the trial?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And with the work was in the 30s. They did do that, Shona.
Mm-hmm.
And it infuriated me. It just infuriated me. She said, what would you do if you had a job and they told you that you had to leave? I'd tell them to go to hell. That's right.
Well, Barbara, did you ever feel that you could not, because of Dorothy's position, did you ever feel that it restricted you in terms of your being able to speak up?
No, because I felt about it and like that, I still kept regardless of about Dorothy. It didn't keep me, and she didn't want it to. She wouldn't have wanted for me not to because of her.
So there were really, your being her mother and her being your daughter didn't create problems for you.
Well, look, we don't agree now on Israel and the Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for Israel, in spite of all the weaknesses, I think. But I'm for Israel, and she said, but don't you feel the same thing about the Arab children? I said, of course I feel bad about the Arab children, but I feel even worse even about the Jewish children, because millions of them were murdered. And there, but for the grace of God, go you, Dorothy.
But by and large, you really, over the years, tended to agree, didn't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Most of the time we agreed.
Now, were you...
Very few disagreements that we had.
Were you identified and seen as being Dorothy's mother, or...
Sometimes, and it was really funny. They had a big affair once... right after the war, and a French woman come and got up and said that we owe such a debt to Barbara and Esther because she took care of Richard and released Dorothy in the struggle. And I thought, my God, did I only take care of Richard? But I wasn't resentful.
Mm-hmm.
No. It was just kind of funny.
Often.
No.
But, now, what,
and I wasn't resentful at that because I thought we wanted to take care of Richard too.
Now, were you the one who mainly raised Richard in his earlier years?
From the time he was 5 days old when he came home, And he was 8 months old when they came from the Union. Travis, from the mine mill as a smelter, and they said, you know, Dorothy, there are so few Union leaders that are respected, but you, even the ponies, respect you. So we need you now very much. She said, but look, my baby's only 8 months old. He said, Barbara, will you take care of the baby so she, Dorothy, can come? I said, of course, you know I will, dear. Of course it, I will. And I did.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were already almost 60 by then. Was it hard on you?
Yes, I was 59, I think. 58 or 59.
Was it difficult on you?
Taking care of Richard, not particularly. Getting up at night sometimes is hard, you know. But sometimes when Dorothy was home. See, the thing with Dorothy was in jail quite often, you know. But when she was home, she tried to make up to Richard because Richard is her passion. You know, that thing that means the most to her in all her life. So, and he is really a remarkable boy. He's really a very nice guy. Of course, see there too, you see, they say that, see, Dorothy and Richard both feel that this, on my part, is not a, is kind of a phony thing. When people are nice to one, or people say, I do feel I'd like to do something for them. And Richard, they say they're doing it because they want to, don't have such an overwhelming feeling of gratitude. But I think the very fact that they want to is a nice thing. Mm-hmm. And I do feel that way. And I don't know, is that really so silly?
No.
And I do feel that way. Because, like, for instance, like Helen and Bob Travis, you know them, don't you?
I know Helen Travis.
Yeah, well, Bob is a very nice guy, too. I love Helen Travis. I really love her because she has such kindness, you know, and everything, and consideration for there was no reason for it. And I know whenever she has a group over, you know, she never fails to invite me and everything. And it's so sweet of her, because I do feel better amongst that group. I always feel I'm amongst friends when they feel that way. And if I could, I'd love to do something for Helen if I could. All I did was buy her a 90-cent package of tea at the Chinese affair that Dorothy and I went to. But now, Ricky feels anybody who wants to do a thing doesn't because they want to. You know, I said, but you can be grateful that they do exercise such a kindness and such whatever it is, humanness or whatever it is. And I do feel that way, though.
So, Barbara, essentially, though, except for the periods when Dorothy was home, you then raised him completely, didn't you?
Well, until Ricky, when he was 17, before he was 17, he was only 16 and a half when he graduated from high school. And then he got a scholarship for Reed, and he went to Reed then. Mm-hmm. But until then, yes. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that when I asked him if he liked teaching, and he said, yes, I love it. He said, you see, Grandma, I started very young, and I was a very good student, people. I told you that he would sometimes come home from school. He was 8 years old, and he would look kind of sad, and it just broke my heart. So I'd have to want to distract his attention, you know. I said, Ricky, what did you have in school today? He said, oh, some guy came, you know, some professor came and told us about astronomy and everything. I said, Ricky, will you do something for me? He said, what can I do for you? I said, you see, Ricky, I only went to school up to the 7th grade, and the only education I got was reading books. But I never got a formal education. Will you listen twice as hard so you could teach me what you get so that you'd help me get a little more education? He said, Grandma, I'll be glad to help you get education. The very next day he came home, he said, let's take a walk, and I want to tell you. Look up there in the sky. Do you see that? That's Sirius, the dog star. That, and then told Papa. Some of it I knew, but sure, no, really and truly, I didn't know something. So just the same, you know, from this child. said, this is...
But was it difficult on him not having Dorothy home very much, do you think?
He said once, you know, he came, I'll show you a thing he gave me, he said, if it hadn't been for you, that you always, I had two homes, you know, he always came first, no matter what. He came first. His welfare, nothing ever came before him. If anyone came to ask me to go to a meeting or anything, if there was any question of leaving Vic or anything, Vic was taken care of, first of all. And so he never felt deprived. But he missed his mother, too, you know. And when Dorothy was home, she was a good mother. She did everything she could, you know. That's one of the things that she and Slim Connolly had quarrels with. See, Slim is a very unusual person. If he likes the person, he likes them. If not, he can be very autocratic. And so when she would sit down or lie down with Vicky and tell him a story or something, he says, what's this kind of a thing, you know, like a baby, you know? Well, you don't do that to a child who has been deprived for so long. So, you know, it only caused greater... Or then Slim and I had tangles, but only he... There was a guy by the name of Bernie Stevens. He had been crippled. His leg and arm had been caught in a kind of a style, twisted, and he never... So he walked, you know, and had... But he could... Oh, he could build anything and everything. Was very handy in every other way. So, when the party had given him the job of being, he had gotten $600 cash for some kind of a thing he had done, and he loaned it to them to be given back to him, and they gave him that he had charge of the people's world in San Pedro, and they never paid him at all. So once at this Ann Trojan that I told you, that Czechoslovakian girl that was at her time, he was telling the people about how he had been treated by the people's world. And so then he came over to my house just a few days after that, crying like everything. He says, look, now I want my money. I need it. They never paid me that I was supposed to have charge of it. They never did it. And they won't give me my money. And he said, I need it. So I went over, Slim was still there with Dorothy. I said, see, Bernie, because Slim is my son-in-law and Dorothy is my daughter, but I have more authority than you have. I don't have any more authority than anyone else. He said, but you can talk to them. I can't get to them. I said, you've talked to Dorothy. She said, Dorothy promised she'll do whatever she can. I don't know what she can do. But won't you help me? I said, I'll do anything I can, Bernie, but I don't know what I can, but I'll try. So he went away crying. So I went over there, and Dorothy and Slim had just gotten up. I said, Dorothy, you've simply got to do something about Bernie Stevens. He came over crying, and when I was over with Ann Trojan's a few nights ago, he was telling all of them there what was happening. That isn't a good thing for the party. It isn't a good thing for the people's world because it's true. And you don't do that to a guy like Bernie Stevens. So Slim said, what's this? What's this? So Dorothy tries to tell him. He says, what does he mean by coming to you? Why doesn't he take it to the regular line? He says, he did. He tried to, came to talk to me when we were in prison. Well, I couldn't do much and everything. But he has tried to, and they pay no attention. He said, well, so he said to me, so I said, well, you've got to do something. So Slim said, you keep your nose out of this. So I said, don't you talk that way to me, Slim Connolly. I'm not your wife, I'm only your mother-in-law. And who the hell do you think you are? You would want your pay, you're getting paid on time. What do you think you think you're any better than Bernie Stevens? Bernie Stevens, you should be ashamed not to give it to him. And everything. And don't you ever dare to talk that way to me. Well, he looked at me in absolute amazement. First time he ever thought, see, he thought I was such a gentle, sweet person that I'd given it to him. For 3 days he didn't talk to me. And I didn't give a damn if he didn't. The third day he came home, he said, "Look, I came home early. Now your wife wanted to go shopping. Let me take you shopping." Well, I had really shopped, so I didn't. But I said, "Oh, thank you, Slim. That's nice of you." Never mentioned it again. Then, one other time happened about a year later. On a Christmas party, John Healy, Dorothy's ex-husband, Ricky's father, was here, and my granddaughter Susan was here, and Frances was here, and Susan was about 7 years old. So Slim came in, took one look and saw all these people here, and slammed out of the door and went back into the house there. So when Dorothy brought over a tray for him, you know, he threw it aside and beat it. And when Susie went in, she said, "Did Uncle Bill something and everything?" So shut up. So she came crying. She said, "Oh." So the next day, when Slim said something about if you had to find out about Mrs. Healy's farmer and everything, I said, "Tush, tush, Slim." I said, "It ill behooves you to talk about that, you know." I said, "You know what a stern mass you are in the union." I said, "You don't get any love for that, you know. So just examine yourself, you know. You can afford to be a little, toned down a little bit, because you're getting no love from anybody, no respect from anybody. You almost lost your job twice at the county, as he was the head of the council." And it was Dorothy who saved it. Dorothy said, "I know that Slim Connolly has a temper. I know that Slim Connolly has produced every time his loyalty to the union, his work in the union, you know, has always been paramount. So you're going to punish him because, you know, he doesn't have the nice manners of a sophisticated flunky." I said, "But has he ever shown any lack of zeal for the union?" Well, he was reelected. But finally, he lost. Because, you know, you can't do that kind of a thing, you know, Sherna. So, afterward, you know, Slim now thinks I'm the nicest person he knows, and he just loves me.
Well, Barbara, did you find yourself in that position very often of someone coming to you to appeal to Dorothy?
If anything like this, the only time that happened was with Bernie Stevens, you know. Because I didn't really think that there was any position, you know. Mm-hmm. When she was in the union, that was a union matter, and I wouldn't think of telling her one thing or the other. I'll tell you what she did in the union, though, once. There was a Mr. Shapiro who had a little something like the big ones, you know, the cannery. Mm-hmm. And he used to give things to the ILD all the time, you know, when they had these bazaars all the time. He gave a lot of things there, you know. Because he was a socialist. But when his workers went on strike because he wasn't giving them enough money. So Dorothy organized the children to come before his house, and they carried sign, "My shoes, the reason I have no shoes is because Mr. Shapiro doesn't pay my parents enough by working to buy shoes for me. This, the only dress I have is this ragged because Mr. Shapiro," and oh, he was just absolutely good. He came and said, "Dorothy, how could you do this to me? You know I helped." He said, "Mr. Shapiro, I know you." He said, "If I did more, you know that the other big boss would put me out of business." She says, "I know that. But you see, Mr. Shapiro, I feel very sorry for you, but my duty is to protect the workers. If you want to be a boss there, I'm sorry for you. I realize the problem. But it's not my business. I'm not here to protect, to help you solve your problem in your business. I'm only here to protect the workers. And I'm doing the best I can. I don't like to do it, but I have to do everything in my power to get them the better wages." So that's all. He says, "I don't know how you can do it to me." She says, "Well, I don't have any influence with El Monte." So, you know, some of the things seem funny, you know, but some of them become very tragic, too.
But it doesn't sound, because I would have thought it would have been difficult. Both of you being so involved and you being known for so long, being in a situation together like that, of people trying to use you a lot because of it.
No. You see, the one who had a lot of trouble was Carol Jean, who when she was in college, I told you, whatever she did, if she did it one way, they said, well, just because you're Dorothy's sister. Or if she did it the other way, it's just because you're Dorothy. And she says, I'm beginning to lose my identity. I don't know. I am my only Dorothy's sister. And what is it I do to win their approval because of being Dorothy's sister? So she's the only one. She finally dropped out. But you know, Shirley, what strikes me, her son was here. You met him.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
You met Tommy. Well, you know, he doesn't know anything about socialism. He didn't know anything about the Rosenberg case. In our home, when my children were young, we discussed all those problems, if anything. When Dorothy came home and said that in reading her lesson on English history, when Cardinal Wolsey said, there but for the grace of God go I, when he saw a man being led to the gallows, she said, that was nice, wasn't it, Mama? I said, Dorothy, it isn't enough to say there but for the grace of God go I, but one must find out why he's going there. Otherwise, it might be you going the next time. You have to find out why and see that you help in any way possible. So we discussed all of it. Like Spain, we all discussed these matters and we all participated in it. And for Carol Jean, who is a fellow of the Belief in Socialism to this day, and does wonderful work. She organizes the letter writers to the congressmen and senators. She gets meetings to meet with them when they're there. She gets out on the picket line. She does all the things. She's in the Unitarian Church, but working always for social things. But her children wouldn't know. They supported Chavez's strike. Like Janet, when she was 7 years old, she said, don't eat scab grapes. But you know something about these things, like the Rosenbergs?
People
how do you...
People
don't know
about the past, usually.
That's...
Well, when Ricky was growing up in your house, it must have been the same thing where he was exposed to
But he went to every picket line, he went to... I think you asked me were his acquaintance, his friends, all in the movement.
Mm-hmm.
That way, Dorothy never told him to be or not to be. He chose his friends, and I told you the things that happened with the neighbors and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he went to every picket line and he read.
Mm-hmm.
See, he began reading when he was very young, read it, the encyclopedia. But he read these things. When he was 14 years old, he read the Mandarin.
Oh, yes, you told me that.
Yeah, remember? So, see, he knew what was going on, and he knows about those. And Ricky is a scientist, and he read the history of these things. He knows what it is.
Well, Barbara, don't you think that you were unusual as a mother, though, even among those who were so active and in the party, talking about it with the children that much? Do you think that the other people that you...
No, I think I did more than most that I know that there's... Because even Elodie Bloor, I asked her if all her children go along with her. She said, no. I said, but how, with a mother like you, how can they? She said, well, I don't force my opinions upon them.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I don't force my opinions, but we discuss them, why I have them.
Mm-hmm.
And the only one who wishes I hadn't been so dedicated is my son. And yet, you know, Sharon, I noticed, but as anti-communist as he is and as anti-Soviet as he now is, but when he meets anyone who's anti-communist and anti-Soviet, he has no use for them because they are for a different reason.